This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It sounds like something out of the science fiction movie Inception, in which that song Edith Piaf's Non Je Ne Regrette Rien plays a central role. But here's a real headline from a few weeks ago. Scientists achieve real-time communication with lucid dreamers in Breakthrough. 10 years ago, Leonardo DiCaprio's character in the movie Inception introduced the idea of entering people's dreams to steal secrets from their subconscious. Here's a short clip.
Say we only use a fraction of our brain's true potential. Now, that's when we're awake. When we're asleep, our mind can do almost anything.
Such as?
Well, imagine you're designing a building, right? You consciously create each aspect. But sometimes it feels like it's almost creating itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like I'm discovering it.
Genuine inspiration, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in a dream, our mind continuously does this. We create and perceive our world simultaneously, and our mind does this so well that we don't even know what's happening. That allows us to get right in the middle of that process.
How?
By taking over the creating part. Now, this is where I need you. You create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their subconscious.
All right, although changing people's thoughts while they are dreaming is still science fiction, being able to communicate with them while dreaming appears to be possible after all. A team of international researchers led by scientists at Northwestern University achieved this breakthrough, and we are joined now by Karen Concoli, cognitive neuroscientist at Northwestern and lead author of the study Real-Time Dialogue Between Experimenters and Dreamers During REM Sleep. Karen, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Ken Paller, professor of psychology, Padilla chair in arts and sciences, and director of the cognitive neuroscience program at Northwestern. He was also a co-author on this study. Ken, thank you for being here as well.
Hi, Brian. Glad to be with you.
Listeners and lucid dreamers, our lines are open for any questions you might have about this scientific breakthrough. You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. 9455, or of course, you can always tweet us at 21st Show. Karen, I'd like to begin with you. Can we get right into the experiment? How exactly were you able to enter people's dreams?
Yeah, so what we did was we basically just talked to them while they were in a lucid dream. So there was teams from four different countries that participated in the paper, and everybody used a little bit of a different method. But in the United States, our team we just literally asked them questions and they heard them while they were sleeping.
So you're just sitting there on a chair next to them or something? Are you whispering?
So the way that we do it is they're in a separate nap chamber and we are on the other side, and we pre-recorded the questions because it's important to carefully control the volume.
That makes sense. Okay. And this is specifically for lucid dreamers, right? What is a lucid dream?
So a lucid dream is when you're in a dream and you realize that you're dreaming without waking up. And so we think it's still an open matter for debate whether you could communicate with somebody in a non-lucid dream. We have some evidence that does suggest it might be possible as well.
How do we know? Are there certain people who can do lucid dreaming? Does everybody do lucid dreams? I got to say, it's not something I've seen it in movies. I don't know that I've ever felt like I've experienced it myself. How do you screen for that?
I think the stats are that about 1 in 2 people have at least one lucid dream in their life, and around 10% of people have more frequent lucid dreams, maybe once a month. But we needed our lucid dreamers to have a lucid dream in the next 2 hours. So even if they had a lucid dream once a month, which is a lot, we had to kind of up that frequency. So we gave people this training to help them have lucid dreams in the lab.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Okay. Ken, I want to bring you into the conversation. When the first respondent clearly and accurately communicated with you, how did you know that?
Well, there are a few things that have to go right. And so we have to be recording the physiology of a dreamer to verify that they're in REM sleep. So we're certain that they're in the sleep stage, not awake. And then after that, they can make signals with their eyes that we've designated in advance. And when we see that signal, it just doesn't happen by chance, you know, hardly ever. So that kind of verifies that they're making the signal intentionally. And then thirdly, after they wake up, they can tell us all about what happened as far as they can remember. And they usually remember a lot of it, not necessarily everything.
So what kind of questions do you have them answer? What are they able to do? I mean, is this, you know, what is E equals MC squared mean? I mean, what sort of things are you asking them?
We want to ask lots of questions as we do this research. But to start, we wanted to ask questions where we knew the correct answer. And that way we could assess, is the communication effective or not? So we stuck with simple math questions that they could answer with a number like from 1 to 4. And then we would know, well, that there's a low probability that they got these right by chance. So that was our starting point, questions that we know the answers to.
So pretty simple questions, it sounds like.
Yeah, and in France, they asked some questions like, do you play soccer or do you like chocolate? Do you speak Spanish? So they asked a variety of other questions that could be answered with a simple yes, no. And the person had a code that they knew how to say yes and how to say no, because of course they can't move their body. They're pretty much paralyzed, but the eyes can move and you can twitch some muscles. You can control your respiration, a few things like that to express yourself.
Karen, I'm curious, was there a eureka moment here? I mean, what was going through your mind when you first realized that you were actually achieving this real-time communication?
Well, at first I didn't believe it. I needed other people to look at the data and confirm that it was actually happening, because I was like, no, it can't be. But then after that, I mean, now that I'm more confident when I'm in the lab, it's really amazing to ask somebody a question and see that they're really answering in real time. You don't have to wait to analyze data or anything. You know, like right then that you're communicating with somebody in another world. And so that can be pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. Ken, it kind of reminds me of hypnosis, right? The idea there is a hypnotist supposedly is able to influence someone under their spell, you know, through thought, their thoughts and actions, through the power of suggestion. And then the spell is broken. They don't remember anything. Were participants in these experiments aware of these conversations when they woke up?
Yeah, they usually remember. So it starts out when they go to sleep, they know we're going to try to communicate with them. So they're expecting it, but they don't know which questions we're going to ask. So they can't sort of pre-prepare what the answer is going to be. They have to hear the question, interpret it, and then give the answer. And yes, when they wake up, they often do remember what happened. So it's not necessarily the case that they have amnesia, but you know, dream recall is a problematic thing. People don't always remember everything. Sometimes they distort things. And so our whole idea is, if we want to understand dreams, we have to find out what people are dreaming at the time they're dreaming and put that together with the physiological measures we get from brain activity and so forth.
How do you know people aren't faking it in some way? How do you know that this is legitimate? Right, what they're telling you.
Well, the critical issue is that they're asleep, so they're in REM sleep. Their brain is in this quite different state, and their muscles are paralyzed, which is not something you can just fake. You can't just sort of put your muscles. At least no one's documented the ability to sort of simulate that sleep stage. So you could pretend to be asleep, but the recordings we make of brain activity would give that away immediately. So we know people aren't just trying to look like they're asleep, because you can't, you know, fake all the physiology that we measure.
Yeah, good answer. All right, listeners, let me take a moment to reintroduce you. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Karen Concoli, who's the lead author of a study that achieved real-time dialogue with people in the midst of lucid dreaming. She's a cognitive neuroscientist at Northwestern University. We're also joined by Ken Paller, who's one of the researchers on the study and is a professor of psychology at Northwestern. And in the study, there was a mention, Karen, of one of the participants heard the questions asked came through a car radio. What were some of the other ways that these questions manifested themselves in people's dreams?
Yeah, so I think that's a really fascinating question. So there is one example where the dreamer was at a party and they heard the questions being asked as though it was God or the narrator of a movie just coming in from the outside. Or there was another example where on the German team, they used Morse code. So they were flashing lights to communicate with their dreamers. And they have an example where in the dream, the lights in the room started flickering. And then they found a fish tank and the light in the fish tank started flickering. And then they went outside and the clouds were flickering. And so there's really interesting different ways in which the same thing could be incorporated in different people's dreams.
I wish you could see the expression on my face right now. It's like that emoji with the mushroom cloud coming out of the top of the head. Just mind blown.
Yeah, and Brian, you started talking about Inception. So Karen can't walk into the dream. She's not experiencing the dream together, but we are changing what they're thinking about. We can implant new ideas, and you know, by asking them questions, we're changing the course of their dream.
I mean, okay, so let's go down this road then. In Inception, the idea is to go into the mind of this corporate tycoon. He runs some big energy company, if I remember correctly. Could you use this technology, theoretically, or this technique someday to, say, you know, change the direction of a company by incepting or implanting an idea in somebody's head?
Well, so far we're using this method where people know it's going to happen. So to do it surreptitiously is a whole different ballgame. But here we're coming in there expecting us to ask things, but we're doing what you could call, you know, dream curation. We're sort of moving around their dream, and we could suggest to them particular things they could dream about. We could suggest particular ideas. But what you're asking about is, if we suggested those ideas, would they wake up and not know where the idea came from? And that seems a lot less likely, because in our case, it's a dream that people remember. In fact, people actually can remember the specific details of the question they were asked and the answer they gave. They're actually learning that information in the process of dreaming.
Yeah,
and they know where it came from.
Sure. Yeah, and we probably shouldn't go too far down this road. I'm a big fan of the movie Inception. One of the plots there is that you have to make it seem like it was their idea in order for the dream to, you know, the idea to really take hold. But there are, let's then talk about some other real life potential applications here. Ken, in an article written about this study, there was another scientist quoted as saying that sleeping conversations, so to speak, might also help the dreamer solve problems, learn new skills, or even come up with creative ideas. Do you have a sense of how this discovery might be used in the future and what this could mean for our waking lives?
Yeah, a lot of people talk about how dreams can spark their creativity. You know, Paul McCartney wrote Yesterday apparently that way, and other people have come up with that idea. We've also studied the ability to change problem-solving results. So we gave people problems to solve before sleep, and then if we reminded them of those problems, they were more likely to solve them later. So there are, you know, various findings that suggest that we could promote more creativity and problem-solving during sleep. And so this method adds to that, with the ability to push that in particular directions. You know, you can go to sleep with a goal of solving a problem, and maybe that can be effective. But this is yet another method to do that, because if you forget your goal, you know, 5 hours later when you're dreaming, this method could allow you to be reminded of it and then interact about it.
Interesting. Karen, last question to you. What is next for this research? Where do you go from here? What are you hoping to achieve or find out next?
We have a lot of different ideas for experiments that we could do next in the lab. So one of them is just like, how can we optimize the protocol? How can we communicate more with dreamers? So we're trying to, you know, have people sleep in the lab overnight instead of nap, so we have more of an opportunity. We're trying different ways of communicating with them. So for instance, some people find the eye signals difficult to do, so we're using sniffing signals instead, which can be really easy to do in a dream. So we're working on that. And then we're trying some different experiments. Not sure exactly which one's going to be the big one that we focus on, but different experiments, just kind of trying to do some psychology experiments that were previously only done during wake with people who are now sleeping.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guests. They have been Ken Paller, professor of psychology, Padilla chair in arts and sciences, and director of the cognitive neuroscience program at Northwestern University. Also Karen Concoli, who is a cognitive neuroscientist at Northwestern University and lead author of this new research study. Ken Paller, Karen Concoli, thank you for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
And that is all the time we have for today. Before we go, I do want to make a pitch for you to subscribe to our podcast. You can find it at 21stshow.org. We have links there. You can also just search for The 21st on Spotify, as well as Apple Podcasts and NPR One. You can also find links to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Anywhere you can find us, we are there. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer, and our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, and this is Stevie Nicks singing Dreams to take us out today. Talk to you next week. The